Hello everyone, and welcome to Coming of Age Stories. That's right, we're back. I have missed doing this podcast so very much, and I'm just thrilled to be getting back into it. My goal is to release an episode every month going forward. But before we get back into full-length episodes starting in November, we're going to kick things off with a little mini episode about the origins of Halloween. One day, maybe next year, I'll do a full deep dive into all the history, myths, and traditions around this holiday. But to get us back in the groove, we're just going to dip our toe in with some of the more ancient origins and a little bit of a chat about what this holiday means for kids, from my perspective anyway. Because growing up in Australia in the 90s, it's been really interesting to see the development of how the holiday has spread here. It wasn't really a thing for the longest time. I was invited to one Halloween party as a kid, and the only places we went trick-or-treating to were the two houses where the party hosts knew the people and had pre-arranged for us to be able to go. But over the years, it has creeped, for lack of a better word, further and further into our culture in this really interesting way, where some people have embraced it wholeheartedly and others will angrily write, "We are not American," into comment sections that mention it. The fact is, Halloween in our culture and across the world means different things to different people, and its evolution is genuinely fascinating. In Lisa Morton's book, Trick or Treat, she writes this in the introduction. What began as a pagan New Year celebration and a Christian commemoration of the dead has over time served as a harvest festival, a romantic night of mystery for young adults, an autumnal party for adults, a costumed begging ritual for children, a season for exploring fears in a controlled environment, and most recently, a heavily commercialized product exported by the United States to the rest of the world. It's really quite a remarkable phenomenon. We're not going to go through all the things today, though, just some of the more ancient history, which, even though it's wildly different to what we know now, has some really interesting connections to the modern holiday. So, if you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe and rate and review if your podcatcher allows you to do that, and follow us on Instagram at comingofagecast. Additionally, I have just started a Patreon. Yes, it feels a little off to be asking for money when I've not made an episode in over a year, but the fact is I would like to change that. I adore making this podcast and I want to be able to spend the time and energy giving it its due. Your support will allow me to do that, and in return, you'll get a bonus episode every month where I'll either be reading aloud from a classic children's story or doing a commentary on a kid's movie or TV show. If you sign up right now, you'll hear me reading an iconic chapter from maybe my favourite book of all time, Anne of Green Gables. I'm really looking forward to getting back into this passion project, and I hope you'll come along for the ride. If you don't have the means to show financial support or just plain don't want to, that is absolutely fine. You can just listen as usual, and I have no plans or intentions to add advertising or anything like that. But enough of all that business, let's dive into the spooky season, shall we? Most holidays are divisive in some way. Christmas can be alienating if you don't have a traditional family. Valentine's Day can be brutal if you're single. Meanwhile, Halloween can be criticised for its supposed devil worship, or it can raise concerns for public safety. Some people absolutely love it, others think it's silly, others are afraid their children are going to get poisoned or drugged. But considering the holiday is all about the overdramatic, it's perhaps appropriate that so much of what we think about it is actually more myth than fact. Lisa Morton outlines in her book that there was a British engineer named Charles Valency who travelled to Ireland in the 1700s to write about their law and culture. He wrote about their festival of Samhain, a Gaelic word which I may be mispronouncing. He mistakenly identified the word to mean some kind of god or demon of death and wrote about it like it was a holiday worshipping this entity. The more commonly accepted definition is actually more like summer's end, but Valency's book no doubt had an impact on public opinion to the point where I would say many people still consider the pagan origins of the holiday to be about worshipping death, demons, or something similar. Samhain, in fact, was an ancient Celtic spiritual festival. On October 31st and November 1st, they would celebrate the harvest and the coming of the dark half of the year. The connection to death comes from the belief that during this time, the line between the physical world and the spiritual world would be thinner or completely break down, letting humans interact with the other world. At this time, spirits or ghosts could return to the world and wreak havoc, like destroying crops or engaging in vandalizing. No records of teepeeing exist, though. In fact, the Celts kept no written records, as their religion forbade it, with lore, traditions, and stories passing down orally, though of course some writings do survive. Samhain had a lot of practical elements to it, as well as spiritual. The holiday was about marking the end of the summer and the beginning of winter. They would essentially do a stock take as they gathered their harvests, and then have a huge party. Animals were slaughtered, and there was a big bonfire, and apparently this was also one of the few times the Celts had access to alcohol, so I imagine things got pretty loose. The festival lasted for 3 days, and there was feasts and celebration, but it was also the time to repay debts, was when a lot of trials would occur, and when you'd show yourself to local kings or chieftains. Samhain was one of few significant holidays in the Celtic calendar and has many folktales, myths and stories that go along with it. It's connected to a tale about demonic giants being driven out of Ireland in a great battle and a romantic fairy tale called The Dream of Angus Og. There's of course not a direct line from Samhain to Halloween, but the unique combination of fun, food, havoc and having a connection with ghosts certainly has a strong connection to the holiday we know today. Halloween has other parentage, though, in the form of All Hallows Eve, how we get its name. Hallow can be translated into the word holy. Hallow's Day was celebrated on November 1st and All Souls' Day on November 2nd, and the combination of all three events was known as All Hallows' Tide. All Saints' Day was about celebrating the saints of the church, and All Souls' Day was a day of remembrance for the departed. All Hallows' Tide as a whole was a period of feasting and prayer and remembering the dead. Festivals that remember people we've lost are a part of many cultures all throughout time and history across the world, and it's just one of the points of connection between Samhain and All Hallows' Eve. So, we get to the 7th century, and Europe has largely been converted to Catholicism, including in Ireland, thanks largely to the work of St. Patrick. Another holiday with a lot of myths and traditions. It's much easier to convert people if you don't change everything about their culture, but rather just add little adjustments here and there. Let them keep their buildings, but repurpose them. Let them keep their festivals, but shift their meaning. And this is generally speaking what happened with All Hallows' Tide and Samhain. It's, of course, much more complex than that, as history and the evolution of traditions usually are. Like when I did my Santa Claus episode, I naively expected this really straight line from St. Nicholas to the modern day Santa and found much more nuance and the melding of so many different ideas and cultures and people groups contributing to the story we now know. Prior to the Christianization of Europe, we had the Roman festivals of Lemuria, Parentalia, and Feralia, all about honouring or placating the dead in different ways, with their own customs, such as leaving gifts of salt, bread, and wreaths on the graves of lost loved ones. As the World History Encyclopedia says, as it was with Parentalia, Feralia, and Lemuria, and many others, so it was with Samhain. Previously, the Samhain festival was associated with all those who had gone on before, with the earth and the change of the year. This transformation was marked by celebration and communal activities. Once the festival was Christianized, All Hallows' Eve became a night of vigil, prayer, and fasting in preparation for the next day when the saints were honored at a far tamer celebration. And at this point, we're still several hundred years from kids dressed as Wolverine knocking on your door requesting Milky Ways. That's pretty much where we're going to leave the history for now. I mentioned my Santa Claus episode already, and I've noticed such a theme or pattern in the way our traditions and folklore evolve. It's of course not a straightforward process, much like the development of language. It relies on this combination of a sort of collective agreement that often goes unspoken, coupled with very set and deliberate attempts at regulation, change, and cultural norms. And as much as the contemporary Halloween is not at all like Samhain, we can still see so many of the remnants, that interesting mix of the playful and the macabre, the dangerous and the silly, and the fact that despite all our knowledge and experience, death largely remains such a mystery to us. Halloween, of course, is not just a holiday for children, but they remain such a key component to it and a reason why so many of its elements, I think, remain controversial. Won't someone please think of the children and all that? The wish to protect our most vulnerable from dancing with the devil, eating a chocolate with a pin in it, or consuming a whole mouthful of marijuana, something that people are definitely super keen to give away for free. If you're not familiar, many of the myths of people poisoning or drugging children on Halloween are completely false. I highly recommend the episodes of American Hysteria and You're Wrong About that debunk these stories. There is a risk to children, though, a risk that rises on Halloween, and that is car accidents. But that's not very sensational. There's very few urban legends about that. So with that exception, I honestly think it's quite a lovely concept for children, and something I'm a bit sad to have missed out on. It seems like such a rite of passage for so many American children. I love costumes and dressing up and going for a walk with friends and family around my neighbourhood to collect chocolate and lollies. Yes, this Australian just refuses to say candy. I can't do it. It all sounds like such a delight. It also strikes me, and I may be wrong about this, that while there's an obvious commercial element to it, it seems less tainted than other holidays are in that regard. There seems to be more freedom with its traditions. Adults can have whatever kind of fun or silly or slutty parties they want. There's no familial expectation, no obvious isolation if it's not for you. It seems to be something people can really make their own, and it's hard not to be super into that. It will be very interesting to see how it continues to grow in this country and across the world. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you'll continue joining me every month and maybe consider joining the Patreon for those bonus episodes. Links to that and the sources I used in this episode are available in the description. Hope you're having a wonderful autumn or spring, depending on what part of the world you're in, and you will hear from me again soon.